Kia ora and welcome to the See Tomorrow First podcast. I'm Courtney Peters, Marketing Manager for NZ Tech. See Tomorrow First is a shared industry and government initiative created by your industry body NZ Tech alongside NZT and NZ Story to shine a spotlight on New Zealand's world-class and in many cases world-leading tech companies and to share their stories with the world. I'm joined today by Dr. Brian Ward. Brian is the founder and CEO of Aroa Biosurgery. Aroa is a soft tissue regeneration company that develops, manufactures and distributes medical and surgical products to improve healing in complex wounds and soft tissue reconstruction. The company was founded in 2008 based on the regenerative properties of ruminant four-stomach extracellular matrix technology, initially investigated and developed by Brian himself. Brian has been responsible for leading the company's growth from startup through to becoming a vertically integrated medical device business with substantial US sales and a developing international presence. We're going to chat today about the origins of the Aroa story and discover how Aroa evolved from research to commercialization to global success, and to hear his views on the potential of New Zealand health and medtech to contribute to New Zealand's economy in the future. Tēnā koe, Brian. Thank you for joining me today.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
How did I go with the extracellular matrix?
Very good.
Pronunciation. It's certainly a tricky one. So I understand Aroa's core purpose is to unlock regenerative healing for everybody. What does that mean?
Yeah, so our technology improves healing for patients, and typically these sorts of biological technologies have been incredibly expensive and, you know, relatively limited in terms of who has access to them. And so what we've sought to do is to develop a world-leading technology to speed up the rate of healing, but also to make it widely accessible to patients. And so, you know, if you think about this technology, typically in hospitals, it's rationed by surgeons only to those patients where they run out of other options. And so our view is that there's an enormous opportunity to not just treat the tip of the pyramid, but to treat the base of the pyramid so that their injuries, their wounds heal faster and you can get them out of hospital quicker and get them back to work or back to their normal lives quicker. There's also, with this technology, there's a lot of new indications where you know, previously price has been limited the potential for it to be used, this type of technology to be used in those areas. So again, an opportunity there to provide more access.
Yeah, when I think of, you know, what regenerative healing brings to mind, it's very sci-fi. It's like, so what is it like?
Yeah, so it's the way our technology works is essentially it provides a framework for soft tissue regeneration. And so what we do is we take a very specific layer of tissue from the forestomach of sheep, and it's very unique in its structure. So it's a very thick layer of this material called extracellular matrix. It's very porous. So what I mean by that is the weave, if you like, in this tissue is very open. And it's also, it has a very high concentration of important signaling molecules that attract cells into that. So if you put this material into a wound, rather than the body having to build tissue from nothing from the ground up, essentially what we do is we provide a framework that fills up the gap, if you like, and then provides a way that cells can quickly move into that gap and start laying down new tissue. You've got this framework, but the signals in the material also act like a magnet, and they pull the cells, it will attract the cells into that tissue and encourage them to lay down new tissue and develop new tissue. So if you kind of, that's kind of the science. If you sort of stand back and look at what actually happens, what you'll notice is just a dramatically different rate of healing between if you use a technology like this or use nothing.
So this special tissue that you found, how did you find it? And how did you then decide to develop it into this product?
Yeah, so if you sort of go back 20 years ago, there's been a real interest in how do you improve tissue regeneration. And what we used to think was that these sort of purified matrices were the way to do it. And they were just like single molecules whereby you created a framework out of those. The challenge with those is they don't have a lot of the signals in them, and the structure of that mesh doesn't really match what cells need. So At that time, a lot of the tissues that were being used were derived from human tissue. And the challenge with that is it's just a limited amount of that tissue. So the big insight was that, and this was, you know, people in the tissue engineering space realized that if you processed animal tissue in the right way, you could remove the components from it that the human body would react against and make it compatible with implanting into people. So there was a couple of things that kind of came together for me. One was that looks, you know, that's a really interesting development. The other thing was that, you know, I'd come back from living overseas, working in a pharmaceutical company. And I was really looking for something to do in New Zealand. And so if you look out the window in New Zealand, there's plenty of sheep and there's a lot of livestock and we've got a very big livestock industry. So the ability to be able to take essentially what was a waste product from the meat industry and then be able to process that and transform that into something that you could use as a medical product just seemed like a really good idea. So I got really curious about that. You know, I trained, my original training was as a veterinary surgeon, so I got out my old textbooks and started quite quickly. You bump into this organ called the rumen, and you know, that just had this enormous amount of that tissue. So that's kind of how I got onto it.
So how did you go from discovering it to then doing the research to make it into a product?
Yeah, so I originally did some research with the University of Otago and Massey University and did that under contract with them. And, you know, from that, you know, there was enough encouraging data to suggest that this was going to be an idea that worked. So on the back of that, I was able to sort of pull all that information together and put together a simple business plan, and I went out and talked to, you know, a bunch of early stage investors, and I think the timing was good. You know, I had an idea that they thought could work, and that was really, you know, how we started the company. So, you know, I had two investors. I had the team from Movac and the team from Sparkbox, and between them and myself, we got the business started.
I've talked to quite a few innovators in medtech, health tech, biotech. Everyone talks about this kind of long pathway of research to develop and commercialize. How did you manage keeping yourself going through that process?
Yeah, it's certainly a challenge. I mean, the thing with medtech is you aren't able to develop a product quickly, you know, because there's huge regulatory hurdles to overcome before you can sell something, and you kind of can't turn up with a half-made product. Yeah. And so for us, the first 5 or 6 years, we didn't really have a product. You know, not a product that we could sell. Like, we were working through the stages of developing a product. I think the thing that really helped us a lot was when we signed our first commercial partner. Early on in the company, we didn't have the capability to be able to sell our products in our own right internationally. And so we were very purposeful about seeking out partners. One reason was, you know, they already had the channel to the market, so they already had customers, and so they would be proficient at doing that. You know, they were important in terms of financing the company as well. So we saw their investment in the company as being an important catalyst in terms of encouraging investment from local investors in the company, mm-hmm. almost from the point of view of validating what we were doing. I think the third thing was that by entering into those partnerships, it bought us capability that we didn't have. And so it allowed us to tap into people that could help us and sort of help us in terms of the next stage of development of the company. So, you know, we did give away something in that, you know, we didn't have the full revenue that we would have had we sold it in our own right. But on the other hand, we didn't have the sales expenses, so we didn't have to pay for the sales team. And I think the net of it was positive. If you sort of think about a pie, you know, we were prepared to give away a couple of slices of pie, knowing that the rest of it we'd be able to address in our own right later. Mm. And so it wasn't really that we were giving away everything. We were just giving away a couple of things that helped us get the company established. And then, you know, later we've been able to kind of come back and address those other parts.
Mm. Yeah, it's an interesting point about finding an offshore partner to give you the credibility to get onshore almost belief.
Yes.
And investment.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. A bit of a New Zealand thing.
It is, you know, that's the thing. I mean, I think we are a bit of a bunch of doubters. And so, you know, I think getting, you know, we like someone else externally, internationally to validate what we're doing. And so I think that was important, yeah.
Yeah. So what are some of the other challenges you've faced since then in scaling and growing offshore?
Yeah, it's almost like there's different challenges every year. Yeah. So, you know, I think early on, you know, a lot of challenges around just, you know, developing the original technology, being able to do that in a way where we were confident that we had a world-leading technology, but also confident that we could manufacture it on a consistent basis. You know, this was started in a lab at really small scale, and we had to be able to take it to a really large scale to be successful. So we had a lot of challenges around that. I think probably one of the biggest challenges for early stage companies is financing themselves through those early stages. And so, you know, I started the company, I raised the first round of financing I think it was December 2007. So the world looked like a fantastic place. Mm. 2008 was like the GFC. So it was brutal. And so, you know, it was very hard to raise money for, you know, 3 or 4 years there. So you're always in this sort of tricky situation in an early stage company where you're very optimistic about the future, optimistic about the, you know, how successful the company can go. But then when you look at your bank account, you're like, you're running out of money, you know, and it's like you sort of, that we had this ongoing situation where, you know, we had 6 months of cash, and we had to get some more money, you know, so it was kind of, it was challenging. That was super challenging.
How do you keep the dream alive when you're facing that kind of?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's all about the team and it's all about what you're trying to do. And I think if you have good people then, and, you know, people are convinced that you can be successful and you have some small wins along the way, that helps. So I think, you know, we went to a lot of international conferences. We had a lot of encouragement from people. You know, some of these sort of deals that we did with various partners gave us the encouragement and kind of, you know, helped us push through some of the harder times.
Yeah. What about the regulatory approval side? How difficult was that?
You know, definitely that was a challenge. So, you know, in our industry, it's very exacting in terms of what's required to be able to commercialize a product. And so there's a couple of things you've got to do. There's a, you know, particular frameworks that you have to adhere to. So having people with knowledge and expertise in that was critical. I was lucky I'd worked with someone previously in my previous role who had great expertise in that area, and she was a big help to us. We also, you know, we contracted in some of this expertise from North America as well. So they provided advice. I mean, I think the first time we did an FDA approval, you know, it was probably good enough, but it wasn't our best work. We certainly got better at it along the way. And it's got easier. You know, now we've probably done a dozen or so approvals in the US, and, you know, we now have a much larger body of evidence and a larger body of data and stuff, so it gets a bit easier. First one's really hard.
And there always seems to be a focus, and it would be good to understand this more, on the US and FDA approval as opposed to other markets. What's the reason for that?
Yeah, so for us, I mean, we made a really purposeful decision right at the beginning that we were going to be a US-focused company. And there's a couple of reasons for that. I think, you know, the US is the largest healthcare market. You know, certainly from a reimbursement payment perspective, you know, pricing in the US is good. Mm. I think from a regulatory perspective, you know, it's probably the most difficult market to enter, and the standards are really high. So we wanted to go into this striving to be at the top end of the market, and so not necessarily, you know, go in through some other country. So I think it set the right standard for the work that was required in order to be able to commercialize the products. You know, it's, the US is a uniform market. It's, you know, it's a large market. It's culturally not too dissimilar, you know, and relatively easy for us to get there and, you know, be active there. So I think in the retrospect, it was still, you know, it was the right answer. And, you know, if I was to do it again, I'd certainly go straight to the US.
Mm. What were some of the challenges of being a New Zealand company going into the US?
Travel. Yeah, you just got to be prepared to get on the plane and, you know, be there a lot. And, you know, certainly in the early years, you know, I was in the States every month, you know, so I was up there a lot and attending, you know, a lot of conferences, knocking a lot of doors, just being, you know, really busy. And I think that's the biggest disadvantage. You know, I found being a Kiwi or coming from New Zealand as an advantage in lots of ways. So, you know, people appreciated the effort of getting on the plane and going there. I've, you know, I sort of tried to turn up as least as much as other companies that were in the US would turn up to things. And I think that that worked. I mean, I think you're probably a little bit of a curiosity as a Kiwi, you know, crashing around America, you know, trying to get things done. And I think people probably gave me opportunities in a way that I didn't deserve or wouldn't normally have got had I not come from another part of the world. So I think I had those opportunities. I think that's like a one-shot thing, and that then obviously what we were doing had to make sense and had to be of interest to the people. But I think it opened a lot of doors and, yeah, provided opportunities for us.
Yeah, we've done some research as part of the See Tomorrow First campaign with tech buyers and market. And the research shows that people generally find New Zealanders to be trustworthy. And I wonder if that was something that you experienced as well as the curiosity aspect of being a Kiwi.
I think so, yeah. I think trustworthy is probably reasonable or probably harmless as well. You know, we're not kind of seen as being too threatening, just seen as being, you know, yeah, interesting. And, yeah, I think I always found, you know, had great access to companies, yeah.
On the flip side of that, the research also suggests that it's harder to be taken seriously because we don't have this kind of broad awareness for New Zealand tech capability offshore. Did you have to kind of go the extra mile to prove yourself that you could actually deliver on what you were saying?
Yeah, I was probably always conscious of that. I mean, I was conscious that we were probably on the back foot. Wouldn't have been evident to people that, you know, a technology, this type of company would necessarily come out of New Zealand. And so probably overcompensated in terms of being aware of that. So therefore, making sure that I sort of addressed that really early. You know, what's important in our industry is, you know, evidence, you know, scientific data, clinical data. And so not overreaching with what we were saying, but with also being able to ensure that we had high quality data to support what we were saying. So I think, you know, being level-headed, but also ensuring that what you were saying you could really solidly back up. So, you know, maybe that comes back to being trustworthy in a way. But I think that, you know, I've certainly seen it in the US, is that's probably the flip of what you see from a lot of companies. But I do think that probably helped us a little bit as well.
So you kind of developed the initial product, but I know you've since then developed a few other ones that have involved some different technologies.
Yes.
Not just biotech. I'd love to hear more about those.
Yeah. We've got two technology platforms. We have our OECM technology, and there's four products built off that. And then more recently, we've developed a new hardware platform. And so that hardware platform is a little disposable pump system. It's a mechanical device that connects to a implant made from our original technology. And so it's sort of a hybrid of, you know, the two things that we're doing now. So it builds on what we've done previously. And if you look at our ECM devices, they're all about growing tissue quickly, whether it's internally or externally. What we see in a lot of the surgeries where that technology is being used is that surgeons separate tissues apart in order to gain access to surgical sites. So that's one thing they do. The other thing is it's quite common to remove large areas of tissue and then be left with a hole that you've got to patch. And so one of the challenges in that sort of situation is that you end up with tissue layers that are separated and are difficult to kind of put back together or stick back together, if you like. And so this new product is about putting something into that space And then the external pump device, what it does is it delivers a vacuum to that surgical site. And so it essentially, it's like putting a plastic bag on the end of a vacuum cleaner. It just like sucks everything together and holds it together and allows those tissues to heal when normally it would, they would just sort of sag apart. And so there's lots of surgeries where the fact that those tissues aren't together leads to downstream complications for the patient. So they can get fluid that accumulates there. The wound site may not heal, and then the patients get a whole range of complications with that. So this new device addresses that problem, and it's really complementary with what we're doing now. Mm. We've needed to build a whole new capability in the company.
I was going to say hardware. That.
Yeah, hardware's not something, we're more from the biology engineering perspective. Yeah. But so we've sort of broadened out what we're doing. For us, it's all about improving those healing outcomes in some of these surgical procedures.
Mm. Congratulations on your recent induction to the Biotech New Zealand Hall of Fame. You've been, you know, a large contributor to the biotech sector. What's your kind of appreciation of the state of the biotech sector, the opportunities there for New Zealand?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's enormous. My experience in sort of life sciences is doesn't really matter where technology comes from. And so there's a huge appetite globally for good technology. And so there's no reason why good technology can't come from New Zealand. I think from a capability perspective, you know, we've got great scientists, great engineers, super capable people, and you know, it's kind of that Kiwi kind of can-do attitude. People just roll up their sleeves and make stuff happen.
Yeah.
And so I think that's fantastic. And if companies are working on the right opportunities, then I think there's enormous opportunity. Getting established globally is hard, you know. So, developing the tech is one thing. Finding a way to sell globally is another. And I think, you know, that's always going to be a challenge in technology generally. You know, 10 companies, 2 or 3 might be successful and the others don't do so well. And I think we see that in New Zealand. You see that in North America as well. I think we're quite brutal in a way on those companies that don't work out, because it's really a game of shots on goal.
Mm.
And I think if we have enough shots on goal, there's no reason why we can't be enormously successful. You don't need a lot of companies to be successful in order to create quite a vibrant and contributing group of healthcare companies. So I think Fisher & Paykel is a great example of that. If you look at it's a one company that's developed a huge amount of expertise, employs an enormous number of people for all sorts of roles. I think as a contributor to New Zealand generally, there's an enormous opportunity.
I also think you see successes like yours and Fisher & Paykel's, and then you see the spin-offs that come from that. People that worked there that start
completely.
Their own.
Yeah, no, and I think that's really important. You know, for me, it's great that I was, successful as it is. I think it's also, we've had a lot of great people that have worked for us, and, some of those people have gone off to start other companies, which is awesome. And, the more of that can happen, it just builds capability and, it's other opportunities for other people further down the line. So I think that's awesome.
Are there any specific challenges that biotech people in New Zealand face as an ecosystem, do you think, that could be overcome?
Raising capital is challenging. And I think if you look in biotech or life sciences, it does depend a little bit on what you're doing.
Mm.
So I think healthcare is probably at the more expensive end of that due to the regulatory considerations. I think in healthcare, medical devices is more straightforward than, a pharmaceutical biotech type company. That requires a huge amount of capital. There's opportunities in industrial biotech, and if you look at Mint or you look at LanzaTech, good examples of that.
Mm-hmm.
There's a real diversity, really. I mean, typically biotech companies or life science companies, they are research intensive, and you tend to have a longer lag between, having the original discovery, you know, and then having a commercial product. It's not, you know, it's not like building a software company where you may have something in 18 to 24 months or maybe quicker. You know, a biotech company is something that's typically 5 or 6 years. So there's that upfront cost of getting there, and I guess there's got to be the appetite from investors to be able to, you know, go through that phase in order to kind of hopefully come out the other end.
Mm. Do you have any advice for future biotech leaders who are at the beginning of that journey? Like what can you tell them that'll help them get through?
I think getting good investors on board is really important. I think, you know, raising enough capital to make sure that you can hit some sort of meaningful milestone early in the company is important. Getting good expertise in the company as well. I mean, we've been really fortunate to be able to attract people from all around the world. You know, and it's what a great thing about being here is people quite like to live in New Zealand, international people. So we haven't found it difficult to bring people here. And so getting people that really have specific knowledge and expertise and not going sort of down blind alleys, I think is super important as well. Super yeah, easy. Kind of hanging in there during the kind of ups and downs.
Resilience.
you need to be able to do that.
Yeah. What do you think we can offer the world, and what do you think the importance of tech is to New Zealand as we move into the future?
I think we, you know, it's interesting not being in the day to day of living in other countries and seeing things from a slightly different perspective, and so I think you know, often innovation that I've seen in New Zealand anyway is sort of, it's interesting. It's always a little bit different and a little bit not so mainstream, but addresses some kind of problems, and maybe they're problems that are here, but people see more here than people see internationally. So I think there's a good pipeline of opportunities. You know, why is it important to New Zealand? I think, you know, like you say, it's a strongly growing sector. I think the other thing about it is it offers a lot of opportunity for people in terms of the type of work that they can do. So, you know, one of the things that we've seen is a lot of our employees are, you know, people that have been to university, done a degree in New Zealand, gone and worked internationally, and, you know, and maybe thought that they couldn't come back and live here. And so being able to come back to a job that's interesting, you know, a job that's it's not just a domestic job, it's like a global job. You know, and there's you know, good prospects for them in the future. I think that's kind of cool as well. So, you know, I think, you know, there's a lot of things that just adds to the kind of richness and mix of you know, job types and industries that you can work in.
Absolutely. Well, thanks so much for joining us today. That's been a great chat. I've really enjoyed it. That's it for this episode of the See Tomorrow First podcast. See Tomorrow First is all about making New Zealand technology world famous, and there are lots of ways for you to leverage the campaign to help scale your tech offshore. No matter where you're at on your tech journey, check out our huge range of tools and resources at seetomorrowfirst.nz. You can listen to this podcast plus other episodes by visiting the See Tomorrow First website, Spotify, or wherever you like to listen to your podcasts. It's been a pleasure to host you today. I'm Courtney Peters from NZ Tech. Nga mihi nui.